Brett Random was having a severely bad time. He was finally where he'd been trying so hard to get to, and it was all turning out to be a terrible disappointment. Being a Random's bastard cut him no ice here. The city was lousy with pretenders to the title, and all his skills at the con and the scam were useless in a city where such things had been raised to an art form over the centuries. In fact, if Rose hadn't been there to protect him, some of his increasingly desperate maneuverings might well have resulted in bloody mayhem. He had thought wistfully of the fortune in alien porn he'd so briefly had his hands on, briefly considered trying to sell the pinnace they'd come down in, and had finally settled for sulking in a truly disgusting tavern, where the wine tasted as bad as he felt. He couldn't even escape from Lewis and his crusade by disappearing into the crowds. Rose's presence made that impossible. Everyone here knew the Wild Rose from her televised appearances in the arena, and she point-blank refused to let Brett go off anywhere on his own, on the understandable grounds that he'd probably get himself killed without her.
I told you I can look after myself. You taught me how to fight.
Yes, but not how to want to. You're far too civilized for a place like this, Brett. Mistport is a city of predators. I can sense it. It makes me feel horny.
I'm in hell.
He'd been drinking for some time, and was blearily wondering how he was going to sneak out of the tavern without paying his bill, when Manfred Kramer finally caught up with him and Rose. Brett had descended from a sulk into full-blown gloom, while Rose amused herself by staring defiantly at the local bravos. Kramer strode up to their table and glared down at them.
I told Gil we couldn't trust you. I knew you'd go scuttling off the moment we turned our backs. What have you been doing? Trying to find one of Finn's spies so you could sell us out?
Go away! I hate this place and I hate you. What use is there in being a con man in a place where everybody knows all the cons? Where pickpockets have their own union? God, I'm depressed. And this cider isn't helping. Someone here told me they'd drop a dead rat into every barrel to help the staff ferment further and to give the booze a little body. And I am completely prepared to believe them. I just know something appalling's going to appear on my toothbrush tonight.
You're a disgrace. Let's see if Gil can maintain his faith in the false Death Stalker after he hears what the man's companions have been doing. Now, are you going to come along with me voluntarily? Or am I going to have to drag you? Guess which I'd prefer.
Oh, I can't be bothered with this. Rose, you deal with him.
Sure.
The decapitated body just stood there for a moment, fountaining blood from the neck. Everyone else in the tavern had already decided it was well past their bedtimes and were leaving at speed by every exit, even the bar staff. In a surprisingly short time, the tavern was empty except for Rose Constantine, the headless body, and a suddenly very sober Brett Random.
What the hell did you do that for?
You said deal with him.
Rose calmly cleaned the blood from her blade.
I didn't mean kill him! That was Gil Akoto's right-hand man! Lewis will have a coronary when he finds out. None of the Mistworlders will follow him after this. And you can bet Lewis will blame me, not you! Oh, God, my stomach hurts! Of all the people you could have killed! This will scupper all Lewis's plans. I don't even want to think about what they do to murderers here. Think! Think!
That's your department.
Brett strode up and down, glaring at the headless body on the floor, which was still twitching, as though it couldn't quite believe what had just happened either.
All right. We can make it look like someone else did it. No, we couldn't. They have espers here. They couldn't pry anything out of our minds, but there were any number of witnesses. Think! Think! Hide the body. Yes! Yes! And by the time they find it, we'll be long gone. Rose, pick up the body. I've got an idea.
Rose picked up the body and slung it effortlessly over one shoulder. Blood spilled down her crimson leathers, but that was nothing new for her. Brett doubted anyone would even notice.
Come on!
He headed for the back of the bar and then down into the wine cellars below. Brett scurried back and forth in the gloom until he finally discovered a barrel of cider that had just been opened. He gestured urgently to Rose, and she dumped the body into the dark liquid. The cider swallowed up Kramer neatly, and Brett nailed the top down very thoroughly. He He and Rose then pushed the barrel to the back, behind all the other barrels. Brett stepped back.
Well, they said they liked their cider to have a little body. All right, let's get out of here. And remember, Rose, this never happened.
Sometime later, Brett Random and Rose Constantine strolled casually back into the Hobhound and expressed surprise that anyone had even missed them. Lewis and Akodai were deep in tactical discussions and barely acknowledged their return. But Jessamine looked up suspiciously from the impromptu signing session she'd organized for her many Mistport fans. Brett stared innocently back.
What? We just went for a stroll. It wasn't like you needed us here. Did we, miss something?
I swear to God you're worse than children. I can't take my eyes off you for a moment. Tell me you haven't done anything embarrassing. Have you seen Manfred Kramer?
No. Was he looking for us? We must have missed him.
I didn't miss him.
Hush, dear.
You're looking very shifty, Brett. What have the two of you been up to?
Not nearly as much as I'd hoped. No one in this city knows a good business proposition when they hear one. The sooner we're out of this dump, the better.
We'll go when Lewis is ready and not before. In the meantime, I have fans to attend to.
And Brett had to find a table with Rose and just sit there, outwardly calm but inwardly shaking, while Lewis finished his discussions with a Kodai, and Jessamine signed absolutely anything the long line of fans put in front of her. Some of them actually wanted parts of their bodies signed, so they could then go off and have the signature tattooed over. Jessamine took it all in her stride. Eventually, it was decided that all the Mistworlders who wanted to join Lewis's rebel force, which was a hell of a lot of them, would join the fleet in their own ships. It was a matter of pride and paranoia. No Mistworlder would ever agree to take passage on an Imperial ship. And then Akotai wanted to wait until Manfred Kramer returned, and Brett almost wept with frustration. Luckily, Jessamine decided she'd had enough of her fans after one of them wanted her to sign a particularly intimate part of his body.
Lewis, we are leaving. Now!
Brett would have kissed her if he hadn't known that would look suspicious. Soon enough, the rebel fleet pulled away from Mistworld, joined by a strange collection of very individual Mistworlder ships.
Where to, Lewis?
Chandrakor.
Ah, shit.
Everyone had heard of the legendary planet of monsters. No one went to Chandrakor by choice, unless they were suffering from a very serious death wish. Rose, predictably, was the only one who seemed pleased at the prospect.
Trust me, Lewis. Everyone is already seriously impressed that you and your companion survived one journey through the deadly jungles of Chandrakor. You don't have to prove anything to anyone.
Though it is just the sort of thing a Deathstalker would do.
You're not helping, Price. Lewis, what is to be gained by going there? The world has no ships, weapons, or even people to add to our cause. You said yourself there was nothing worth salvaging from the old crash-landed standing. All Chandrakor has is monsters. Oh, no.
Oh, yes, Admiral. I do feel I should point out that every hour we spend not heading toward Logris does give the usurper Finn that much extra time to prepare for battle. It would be a shame to throw away what little advantage we've got.
We're going to Chandrakor. I gave them my word.
To monsters?
Many of them were human once. Some of them still remember. Do you remember, John Silence? Were you part of the decision to take all those made into monsters by Lion's Donor Shub? All those poor unfortunates? And just dump them among all the other monsters on Chandrakor? To leave them there so they could be forgotten?
Robert and Constance made the decision, and I went along with it. There was no way of curing or restoring them. Relocating them to Chandrakor seemed kinder than just killing them all.
Excuse me, but what are you talking about?
One of the Golden Age's nastier secrets. Back when the rogue AIs of Shub were still the official enemies of humanity, they routinely captured and experimented on humans, making them over into monstrosities in their secret laboratories, sometimes for information, sometimes as part of their psychological warfare. And sometimes the Empress Lionstone XIV ordered the same thing done in her secret laboratories, in her search for new weapons, or just for the fun of it. And then there was the Mater Mundi, trying to turn Espers into Super Espers, and failing as often as not. So, when the Great Rebellion was finally over and we were all friends again, Robert and Constance were faced with a problem of what to do with all the leftover monsters, which had once been men and women. There was no place for monsters in the wonderful golden age King Robert and Queen Constance were determined to build, so they gathered up all the products of all the secret labs and dumped them on Chandrakor, to live or die as best they could. And then, the Empire did its best to forget they ever existed.
We had a civilization to rebuild. We couldn't do everything. We had to have priorities. We needed to spend our time on the problems we could solve. And if that makes us sound hard-hearted, look, we'd all been through a lot. We were all very tired.
I gave those monsters my word that they would go home again. And so they will. First as shock troops in our war with Finn, and then as our lost children. Set a course for Chandrakor, Admiral.
Typical bloody Deathstalker. Always being right.
And so, the fleet went to Chandrakor. Some were heard to say that though they'd sworn to follow the Deathstalker to hell and back, they hadn't necessarily meant it literally. But no one said it too loudly. Except for Brett Random, who made it very clear that there was no way he was going back down to the planet's jungles under any circumstances whatsoever. And to prove it, he locked himself in his quarters with several bottles of wine and barricaded the door. Rose reluctantly stayed behind too, to keep him company and stop him from getting hysterical. In the end, only Lewis and Jessamine would descend to the surface of Chandrakor in a simple pinnace, and only Silence turned up to see them leave.
You know, they're calling this Deathstalker's folly. Everyone agrees you're being very brave, but there's already heated betting as to what condition you'll return in, or even whether you'll be back at all.
I hope you're betting on us.
Of course. I never could resist the really long odds. Lewis, do some of them really remember being human? We had hoped that... well, after all this time...
Yes, they remember the lives they had, the people they knew, the worlds they came from. And they dream of being able to go home again.
Lewis, they can't. We still have no idea how to undo what was done to them. Even Shub doesn't know how. What could these monsters do? What could they be on civilized worlds? Neither human nor alien. How would they ever fit in? Everyone they ever knew is dead and gone. They'd end up in zoos.
I gave them my word.
Then, your responsibility, Deathstalker. Hopefully you'll make a better job of it than I did, when it was my responsibility.
Lewis guided the pinnace down into the nightmare jungles of Chandrakor, darting in and out of the higher treetops until he was finally able to land in the clearing that held the buried Deathstalker standing. The air was hot and wet and sticky as Lewis and Jessamine stepped out of the ship and onto the dark, spiky grass. Lewis looked carefully around him, keeping his hands near but not actually on his weapons. So far, nothing had entered the clearing. It looked pretty much as he remembered it, but with no signs of the extensive damage that had been done during the last attack of the Emperor's troops. The fast-growing jungle had already covered over the scars. Lewis couldn't even tell where the entrance to the standing had been before the castle's ancient computers blew it up as one last service to Clan Deathstalker. Tall, wide-boled trees formed a guardian circle around the clearing, and shadows moved among them. Jessamine wiped at her perspiring face with a cloth.
There is definitely such a thing as too much sunshine, darling. God, it's hot. And I really do hate this humidity. It does my skin no good at all. I just know I'm going to end up with another nasty heat rash. Where are they? They must have heard us land. You know, Lewis, I have to say that this doesn't strike me as one of your better ideas.
Do you want to abandon them too?
Well, not as such, sweetie, but... shock troops, yes, I can see that. But what about afterwards?
I gave my word as a Deathstalker.
Oh, yes, dear, you did, which was all very honorable. But you can't feel guilty about everything the Empire did in the name of your legendary ancestor.
I can try to put things right, and I will. I have to. That's what being a Deathstalker means. Especially when you're the last one.
He and Jessamine both looked around sharply. And one by one, the monsters left the tree line and ventured into the clearing, emerging into the light of day like horrid ghosts from the eternal shadows of the jungle. There were all kinds, large and small, every possible example of mixed natures and merged genes. They moved in slowly from every side, wrapped in spiked armor and twisted shapes, with too many legs and eyes, or not enough, in forms so vile and so affecting that Louis and Jessamine had to fight to keep from looking away. She stood very close to him, almost moved to tears at the horrible shapes that had once been men and women. She still kept her hand near her gun. The monsters filled the clearing, pressing slowly forward from every side, until suddenly, at some unseen, unheard signal, they all stopped. One creature came forward to confront Louis and Jessamine. It had been turned horribly inside out, its exposed red and purple organs gleaming wetly in the bright sunlight. A more or less human face had been stretched across its flayed chest. The mouth was wide and mobile, and the wide-set eyes held no understandable emotion. The bulging body hung in a cage of thick-furred, spindly legs.
You came back.
Yes. I told you I would.
So you did, Deathstalker. I think I had a name once, but that was long ago, and I don't remember it. I remember some things, flashes of home and family, but not whether I was a man or a woman. It's hard now to even think what that meant. I am Speaker. I am the voice of those who remember being other than monsters. Why have you come back, Deathstalker?
Because I made you a promise. I have a fleet of ships now. We're going back to Logras, which was called Golgotha in your day, to throw a false emperor off his stolen throne. I want you to come with us, all of you. Be my shock troops in this war. And afterwards?
Yes. What afterwards?
You will all go home. We'll search out what records remain. Do our best to find out who and what you used to be. If all else fails, the Espers will dig the truth out of your minds. But every damned one of you will go home. No one gets left out. No one gets left behind. Whatever can be done for you to make you more comfortable will be done. Science has come a long way in 200 years. Of course, this all depends on us winning the war.
We can fight. We know how to do that. Could we really be cured, made human again?
I don't know. But the blessed Owen has returned, more powerful than ever. I've seen him perform miracles. And there's always the Madness Maze. It transformed us. Perhaps it can transform you.
We will go with you, taking a chance on your name and your word. But if we fight for you and do not die, you must promise to kill us rather than return us here. We will either live as human or die as monsters. We could not stand to have to live without hope.
I understand. I promise I won't let you down.
Not all of us want to go. Some have already said they won't leave Chandrakor. They have forgotten what it was like to be other than what they are. Or perhaps they no longer care. The jungle has become their home now. They belong here.
If I could speak to them...
They would kill you. They are only monsters now.
Well, my offer will remain open for as long as any of them live. Prepare yourselves, my friends. Your journey home begins.
At Louis's command, remote-controlled cargo ships came floating down like autumn leaves, hundreds of them, enough to ferry the largest and the smallest creatures out of the clearing and up to the fleet. Remote-controlled, because no human pilot wanted to get too close to the legendary monsters of Chandrakor. The monsters understood. They weren't ready to be seen by humans either. So they were parceled out among the various star cruisers, traveling in the mostly empty cargo bays, kept separate from the crews by guilt and fear, and heavily locked doors. Louis's next choice of destination was his home planet, Viramond, and no one objected to that. Everyone understood his need to go home, to see for himself the terrible thing that Finn Durandal had ordered done to Clan Deathstalker and their ancient standing. It wouldn't seem real until he had seen it with his own eyes. And no one at all doubted but that the people of that world would want to fight alongside the fleet. They were all born to be warriors in honor of the Blessed Owen. It fell to the knowledgeable Captain Price to explain to Lewis why the people of Viramond had not already risen up in outrage against the massacre.
There are two transmutation engines in high orbit around Viramond. Any sign of rebellion on the world below, and the engines would turn the whole planet into a lifeless wasteland. Finn's direct orders. The only reason he hasn't used the engines already is that he undoubtedly meant to use this threat to keep you in line once you reappeared.
Lewis nodded. He understood how Finn thought.
Program the Star Cruiser's targeting computers to lock onto the engines. The moment we drop out of hyperspace, I want both those engines hit with every weapon we've got. Do a good job, Price. We won't get a second chance at this. You can bet good money that Finn would have programmed the engines to strike at Viramond the moment Rebel ships arrived. Then we'll take time to check for hidden booby traps in orbit. Be very thorough, because you can be sure Finn was. We're not going down to Viramond until we're sure it's safe, for them as well as us.
In the end, it was as simple as that. The two transmutation engines made a fine display as the fleet blasted them apart, and it didn't take long to search out the orbiting mines and other nasty surprises that Finn had left behind. Lewis made contact with Capital City and was immediately welcomed home and invited down. Parades and celebrations in the city were promised, but Lewis politely declined. He needed to see what was left of his standing, his family home. Lewis and Jessamine went down alone on the pinnace again. Brett, seriously drunk but still in full use of his self-preservation instincts, declined, ostensibly because there was nothing worth stealing on Viramond, but actually because he didn't want to risk Rose's killing someone important again. He didn't think his nerves could stand that. And Silence didn't go along, because he had once been part of the invasion force that Lionstone sent hundreds of years ago to pound the people back into barbarism, eliminating most of the planet's original culture. They'd done such a good job that the planet was still recovering, even now. Lewis and Jessamine rode the pinnace down to Viramond. It was a smooth enough trip. Lewis knew the way home. Jessamine studied him worriedly. He was being very quiet. She wanted to help, but couldn't see how. So much had happened to Lewis since he'd last been here, and he'd never been the easiest person to talk to when it came to personal things. He'd lost pretty much everything he ever cared for, except for her. Lost his family and his home, his clan and his standing. For a long time now, he'd been running on anger and revenge and duty, and Jessamine had to wonder what would happen to Lewis when he no longer had those things to hold him together.
This is Viramond Comm Center. Welcome home, Sir Deathstalker. We always knew you'd come for us. Quite an impressive fleet you've picked up. Trust a Deathstalker to come home in style. I have been asked to warn you about the current condition of your standing.
Is it true? Are they all dead?
I'm afraid so, Sir Deathstalker. We did think a few minor cousins might have escaped, but now all the bodies have been identified, we're sure no one was missing on the day. Everyone with the clan name was killed. The Emperor's creatures were very thorough. You are now the last of the direct line.
No. There is another. Owen has returned.
Then the rumors are true. He's really back.
Yes. He's gone to face the Terror.
We are living in a time of legends reborn. A deputation will meet you, Sir Deathstalker, on the grounds of the Standing.
I don't think I want to meet anyone just yet.
You'll want to hear this. Clan Deathstalker continues. It is not gone. Viramond Comm Center out.
Well, that was enigmatic. What do you suppose they meant?
I don't know. I don't care. I just want to go home.
He landed the pinnace on his family landing pad, decorated with the family crest, on the grounds of the ancient castle that had been home to Clan Deathstalker for so many generations. There wasn't a lot left of the old stronghold now. Jessamine followed Lewis nervously as he descended from the pinnace, strode across the landing pads, and then just stood looking at the smoke and fire-blackened remains before him. All of the east wing had been blown away, leaving the interior rooms and corridors exposed to wind and rain. The courtyard walls were gone, and the front and west wing walls were pockmarked with jagged holes from disruptor fire. Even the roof had been punctured through repeatedly by energy weapons and explosions. Finn's people had put a lot of effort into destroying the castle, but still most of it stood, defiant as ever. Jessamine took Lewis's arm, trying to comfort him with her presence.
I never realized the place was so big, Lewis. It's still very impressive.
I always believed I'd come back someday. But when my time as a paragon was done, I'd come home again to lead my family. We'd all sit around the open fire in the great hall, with the dogs lying around. And I'd tell them tales of the greatest city on the greatest world in the Empire. And now all that is gone. All that I really care about is that my mother and my father are dead. I never got a chance to tell them all the things I'd done. The things I did because I wanted them to be proud of me.
They knew. And of course they were proud of you. They were your parents.
They're gone. And I'm alone. I want my mom. I want my dad.
Jessamine took him in her arms, but he didn't cry. They both looked around sharply. Lewis pushed Jessamine away, and his hands went to his weapons. Ships filled the sky, coming in from every direction. So many they blocked out the sun. Transport ships, cargo ships, small family ships. They landed one after another, filling and overflowing the landing pads, and settling down where they could in the surrounding countryside. Hundreds of men and women disembarked and headed straight for what was left of the Deathstalker standing. The crowds surged forward. They gathered before him, milling uncertainly, and then one man at the front of the crowd sank down on one knee. And everyone followed his example until the whole crowd was kneeling before Lewis, their faces radiant. The first man to kneel had a familiar face. Lewis remembered Michel Dubois, once the Member of Parliament for Viramond, now an exile and outlaw like Lewis. Once they had been rivals for Viramond's love, even enemies, but Dubois had changed much since Lewis last saw him. He looked up at Lewis with wild eyes, fanatical, and perhaps a little mad.
Welcome home, Sir Deathstalker. All the families of Viramond have sent representatives here to do you honor. Where you lead, we will follow. The whole planet has taken an oath of vengeance against the Durandal and his people, sworn upon your name and upon our blood. We are yours, to lead into battle. We are all Deathstalkers now.
Talk about intense. Is he on something?
Hush. Your manner has changed since our last meeting, Dubois.
The world has changed. My loyalty has always been to Viramond. You know that. Finn has proven himself unworthy and an enemy, a coward and an animal. Take us with you to Logres, Sir Deathstalker, and we will drag him from his throne and hang him from the walls of the palace.
Dubois paused a moment, looking past Lewis at the ruined castle.
I had an aunt who was a Deathstalker, from a minor branch, but she bore the name proudly. She died here with the rest of the clan. She was always good to me. We have all lost loved ones here.
I never knew we were related. You never said.
I wanted to make it on my own. By my own worth, not through family connections. Under your leadership, we have all sworn to be Deathstalkers. Every man and woman on this planet!
Woe to all who raise the rage of Viramond. Very well, Michel. Get these people out of here and get them organized. I want everyone that's coming off planet in 2 hours, and everything you've got that flies. The fleet is waiting for you. And they'll find room for anyone who wants to come and fight, but doesn't have a ship. How many can we count on?
My lord, every man and woman has sworn to follow.
Hold everything. Everyone? The whole adult population?
What was done here touched everyone. We were all raised as warriors, in Owen's name, to do him honor. Now he has returned. How can we be found wanting?
He rose to his feet and turned to address the waiting crowd with Lewis's instructions.
Viramond shall truly be a part of the new rebellion. To your ships, my friend.
Lewis and Jessamine left him to it and walked slowly through the courtyard of what had once been a mighty castle.
Why haven't they even tried to repair it? The basic structure seems sound enough. They could have at least made a start.
It wasn't their place to do anything. They were waiting to see what I would decide. Besides, it's evidence. This is a war crime. A sight to inspire people to revolt. I'm going inside to see how bad the damage is. You don't need to come, Jess.
Of course I do, sweetie. Even Deathstalkers need someone to lean on, sometimes.
The first bad thing they encountered was a monstrous pile of junk raised up before the smashed-in front doors. Finn's people had piled up in the courtyard all the Deathstalker belongings that weren't worth looting or trashing. They'd clearly tried to set the pile on fire, but it hadn't taken. Lewis approached the pile slowly, almost cautiously. He recognized a few items here and there, but made no attempt to touch or rescue anything. His ugly face grew increasingly set and harsh. In the end, he turned his back on it, like turning his back on a grave, and headed for the open main doors. Jessamine went with him, not sure he even knew she was there anymore. Inside the castle, the damage was worse, if anything. Explosives had clearly been set in vulnerable spots to try to bring the place down, but the thick, solid stone walls had defeated them. The walls still stood, though much holed and scarred, and there was rubble everywhere. Floors and ceilings were slumped and ruptured, but still held together. Deathstalker standings had always been designed and built to take punishment. Deathstalkers led dangerous lives, and they had long memories. Jessamine followed Lewis as he wandered through rooms and corridors, stepping around or over the general destruction. Furniture had been smashed and burned, bookcases overturned, and centuries-old tapestries and portraits torn down and trashed. Everything of obvious value was gone, taken, and everywhere there were signs and stains where Finn's creatures had relieved themselves, like dogs marking their territory.
Finn knew this would hurt me. Almost as much as losing my mom and dad, and my family. Back when we were friends and the world still made sense, he and I often spent long weekends here. He was my guest, and I showed him everything. He had to know how much this place, its history, meant to me. I told him. I told him everything. And why not? He was my friend. What will Owen say when he sees this? This was my family's duty. To keep the standing in trust for him when he returned. This place was always more his than ours. And we failed him.
He'll understand. He knew what it felt like to be betrayed.
They climbed a crumbling, broken stairway to the next floor. There was a wide gap in the middle, a dozen feet across. Lewis and Jessamine jumped across it easily, without thinking or effort. And only afterwards realized what they had done and looked back at the gap.
Huh.
Jessamine leaned over to look down into the long drop, and then gripped Lewis fiercely by the arm.
My God! I don't believe we just did that!
Jess, you're cutting off the circulation in my arm.
Look at that drop! Look at that gap! And we jumped it like it was nothing! Back before the maze, I couldn't have made a jump like that if you'd goosed me with a cattle prod.
Jess, my arm?
Oh! Sorry.
We're changing. All the time, we're becoming something else. Something better. In little ways, we don't always notice.
And then suddenly, he and Jessamine sprinted forward, charging up the remaining stairs at more than human speed. They reached the landing and looked back, not even breathing hard, and watched the steps where they'd just been standing slowly tear themselves away from the wall and plummet to the floor far below. Lewis and Jessamine looked at each other.
We knew that was going to happen. We sensed it. Now that is seriously spooky.
I'd be hard-pressed to name anything in our lives that hasn't been for some time, no. No doubt, eventually, we'll get used to it.
I hope so. I don't know if my nerves can take much more of this. It's worse than opening night.
They walked on, unhurriedly, through the devastated castle. They looked into every room, but nowhere had been left untouched, unsullied. Finn's creatures had made a thorough job of their desecration.
You should have seen it in its prime. It was magnificent. The accumulated treasures and wonders of centuries. Family history that went back to the First Empire. Paintings and antiques and objets d'art. Some of them so old even we weren't sure what they were, or what significance they might once have held. One day it would have all been mine, to enjoy and preserve. I wanted to share it with you, Jess.
And you will.
Jessamine hugged his arm tightly and lay her golden head on his shoulder.
This can all be rebuilt, restored. I'm seriously rich, remember? I have money in accounts all over the Empire that Finn's people couldn't find if they used an Uber Esper and a dowsing rod. I have more money than even I can spend in one lifetime, and it's about time I put it to some good use. I can't restore the treasures that you've lost and the things that meant so much to you, I know that. But the Deathstalker standing can be made magnificent again. We'll see to that. When all this madness is over, we'll put everything right again. You'll see.
It wouldn't be the first time this old place has been rebuilt. Deathstalkers tend to lead dramatic lives.
How are you feeling, Lewis?
Glad that you're here with me. And glad that I came here and saw this. It reminds me of the oldest truth of my family. That no matter how bad things get, Clan Deathstalker endures. We never forgive, we never forget. And we bring our enemies down, whatever it takes.
Sometime later, his pinnace led a flotilla of assorted ships up from Viramond to join the waiting fleet, more than doubling it in size. Clan Deathstalker was going to war. Back on the flagship Havoc, Brett Random and Rose Constantine had been roaming the steel corridors for some time, looking for some trouble to get into. Brett had run out of wine and was bored, always a dangerous combination. So he went wandering, and Rose went along with him, because whatever Brett got up to, it was bound to be at least interesting. No one ever challenged their right to be wherever they were the Deathstalker's companions, and therefore trusted. More fools them, Brett thought. He descended further and further into the ship, into areas passengers rarely ever saw. Brett was determined to find something amusing to do, if only to demonstrate his independence from Lewis. Besides, with the drink finished, there was nothing else left to do except have sex with Rose, and there was a limit to how much of that his nerves could stand.
Oh, there's got to be a still somewhere on this ship, or a med tech turning out knockoff battle drugs. Something to get a desperate man comfortably out of his head for a while. I did try the med bay earlier, but Jessamine had already warned the doctors about me, the bitch.
Why don't I just grab someone and pound them until they tell us where to find the good stuff?
Ooh, better not. We're not exactly popular around here as it is. The last time I went down to the main galley, just looking for a little food and good company and perhaps a friendly game of dice, everyone I tried to talk to just made some excuse and left. Some of them didn't even bother with the excuse. Some of them even left their meals behind.
Our reputation has gone before us.
No one's actually said anything, of course. We are mage people, after all, and friends of the Deathstalker. But are we treated like heroes? No! We're made about as welcome as a skid mark on a hotel towel. You know what, Rose? I think you're right. To hell with whether or not Lewis gets upset. Grab the next crewman you see and shake some information out of him.
So they stood and waited for the next unfortunate to pass by, and then Rose picked him up and slammed him against the nearest wall.
Pardon me, my good man. Where might someone such as myself find the recreational aids aboard this bucket of bolts?
Try the third sub-galley, down on deck 43. There's always something going on there. Please put that knife away.
Rose dropped him back onto his feet and put away her dagger. The crewman slid along the wall, putting a little distance between them, and scowled at Brett.
I knew we couldn't trust you. Scum always finds its own level.
We are not scum. We've been through the madness maze, remember?
That's right. You're monsters. We should have locked you up in the cargo bay, along with all the other freaks from Sandracor.
Rose raised her knife again, but Brett stopped her. He'd had enough of hiding bodies. He smiled unpleasantly at the crewman and put all his Esper compulsion into his voice.
You forget all about this conversation. Then shit yourself. Then run away.
Oh, no.
I really hate this ship. I could cope when it was just Lewis and Jessamine being disapproving, but everyone here sees us as second-class heroes. At best. We're doing that more and more lately. Completing each other's thoughts, coming up with the same ideas, even sharing body language. I notice these things. We're becoming more like each other. And I don't like it. There's only room in this empire for one Brett Random.
I'm horny. Find me someone to kill. Sex with you is nice, but it doesn't satisfy like the real thing.
Oh, why me?
Try and contain yourself, Rose, please. Soon enough, we'll be going up against Finn and all his armies, and then you'll be hip-deep in all the slaughter you can handle.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it. But I am concerned about facing the Durandal again. He scares me.
Brett was actually shocked, but there was no denying she meant it.
I didn't think you were scared of anything.
Finn is a special case.
Brett had to agree. Just thinking about facing Finn again made his heart pound in his chest.
I'm remembering my past differently, Brett. Seeing things differently. Because we are linked, your mind affects me as much as mine affects yours. There are times when I think of other things than killing. It would be wrong to say I'm developing a conscience. I don't think you and I possess one between us. But I am capable of seeing people differently now. As people, rather than just targets. It disturbs me.
Do you feel any differently about killing people?
I think it might make killing people even more fun.
I'm changing the subject. We need to work out a way to make ourselves some serious money before the action starts. Miss World turned out to be a complete bust, and Viramon was always going to be a non-starter. We could sell our stories to the media after the war, but that rather assumes there's going to be an afterwards. Besides, most of our stories aren't suitable for the mass media. Either way, I think I've done my part in this rebellion. No more fighting and diving into danger for me. I don't care if our mental link has made me a better fighter. It's just not me. I'd grab a ship and desert if it weren't for the marvellous possibilities of looting when we finally take the Parade of the Endless. But I've got to find something to do before then, or I'll go crazy from boredom. Something worthy of my talents. So, let's try the directions that kind and accommodating crewman gave us before he had to go and change his trousers. There's got to be a friendly card game I can get into somewhere. There's always good money to be made from the kind of people who think poker is a friendly game.
I still want to kill someone.
All right, I'll accuse someone of cheating. After I've made a decent sum.
They headed down to Deck 43. It was a long way down. Brett tended to forget until forcibly reminded that Imperial Star Cruisers were the size of floating cities and as complex. Normally, it was a very well-run, very calm and tranquil city in between engagements, but Brett couldn't help noticing the freshly daubed graffiti that appeared on the steel walls as they descended towards Deck 43. The Church is the only true authority. The true Owen is watching you. Death to heretics. Pure humanity, pure loyalty. Long live Emperor Finn. And the voices in my head are getting louder.
Some of those sentiments are really worrying, particularly that last one. You don't get the significance, do you? This graffiti means that not all the crew are of one mind. They were all supposed to have had a change of heart once Owen appeared to them. But this suggests very strongly that there are still pure humanity and church militant fanatics aboard this ship, still loyal to Finn. The real hard cases. Which means, well, I don't know. Sabotage, maybe? Knives in the dark? Internal dissension in the ranks when it comes time to fight? Oh, that's the last thing we can afford when we come to face Finn's defenses.
Should we tell someone?
Rose made a genuine effort to sound interested to please Brett, but she didn't really care.
Not yet. We need to know more. And just maybe, I smell an opportunity. Let us press on.
At the entrance to Deck 43, they found someone waiting for them. A single crewman in a Marine's uniform, tall and muscular, with a rather droopy mustache that didn't suit his otherwise wolfish features. He smiled and nodded easily to the newcomers.
Brett Random, Rose Constantine, we've all been looking forward to meeting you.
Have you?
Brett was ready to break and run at a moment's notice.
Oh, yes. I'm Leslie Springfield, Marine Trooper Second Class, and Random's bastard in bad standing.
The best kind.
You should be glad I'm here. This is enemy territory. You wouldn't have made it this far if I hadn't vouched for you.
Oh, that was very kind of you. What's it gonna cost me?
Oh, maybe a small percentage later on? Now come with me. People are waiting to talk with you.
What sort of people?
The large and growing part of this crew who remain loyal to Emperor Finn and the ideals of pure humanity and Church Militant. The illusion of the false Owen didn't fool us for a moment. We knew Shub trickery when we saw it. The true Owen would never reject our ideals. He was always an enemy of aliens in the AIs of Shub. Now let's do hurry along. You didn't really come down here for a drink and a game of cards, Brett, and you know it. You could have found them anywhere if you'd really wanted to. No, whether you knew it or not, you were looking for us, because you know we're the winning side. Price's bunch of losers and freaks don't stand a chance against properly motivated Imperial armies.
Maybe. What exactly are you selling, Leslie?
A chance to be legitimate again. To come back where you belong. I can hook you up with the Loyalist cause, even put you in contact with the Emperor himself. Yes, I thought that would interest you. Come on, Brett. You don't belong with the traitor Deathstalker and his slut. They're going to lose, and lose hard, and you know it. Mainly because the Loyalist crew are going to seize control of all the Star Cruisers in this fleet long before we get anywhere near Logris. We have no intention of fighting and dying for heretics. And remember, there's a hell of a big reward waiting for anyone who brings the Emperor the heads of the Deathstalker and flowers. 15 million credits apiece.
What is it you people want from me? Not that I'm committing myself to anything, you understand? I'm just listening.
Information, to begin with. Mostly concerning the Deathstalker and Flowers, when they're at their weakest and most off guard.
What about John Silence? He is a legend.
Is he? Hell, he's just an old merchant trader with delusions of grandeur. Playing Santa Claus at the coronation wasn't enough for Samuel Chevron. Oh, no, he has to be John Bloody Silence. You'll notice he was careful not to go down to Mistworld or Viramond, where they knew the man and could have unmasked an imposter. No, the original John Silence was a good military man and unwaveringly loyal to the throne.
15 million credits apiece. I have to say, I am tempted. What do you think, Rose?
You will decide for both of us, Brett, as you always do. I've never cared for which side I'm on, as long as I get to kill a whole bunch of people.
Predictable, but still upsetting.
Besides, I've always wanted to know whether I could take the Deathstalker.
Join us. Soon there will be an uprising on every Star Cruiser in the fleet. Loyal crew members will position themselves to strike down every officer who is not with us and replace them with our own people. Then we shall take control of the fleet and put to death all disloyal elements.
Just like that?
No. We know it will be a hard and vicious struggle. But there are more of us than you think, and we have God and the Emperor on our side.
Rose and I need to talk about this for a moment.
Leslie politely stepped back away so Brett and Rose could have some privacy. Brett scowled.
I always did think the fleet surrendered to Owen too easily. If there really are as many fanatics as this guy makes out, they could just pull this off. The Deathstalker's a hell of a fighter, but even he couldn't take on a fleet by himself. And those ragbag ships from Mistworld and Viramond wouldn't stand a chance either. The rebellion could be over before it even got started. Suddenly I haven't got a clue what to do for the best. This is why I hate being on a starship. Nowhere to run! Why did they have to give me a choice over which side to be on? Finn's a bastard and a monster, but I'm damned if I'm going to be on the losing side. Would he really take us back? He might. All he ever cared about was winning. Oh,
God, my stomach hurts. It never bothered me when I was with Lewis. I think some of his moral certainty's rubbed off on me.
Can we trust Finn to keep his word afterwards? Can we trust him about the reward and our safety?
Probably not. Unless we can negotiate from a position of strength. Stay well out of his reach at all times and then use the reward money to disappear among the border worlds.
Is that what you want to do?
Well, not want exactly. Finn's an evil piece of shit and strange with it, but he could win this war. And I have no intention of dying gloriously for a lost cause, no matter who my ancestor was. But on the other hand, I like Lewis. Even admire him, I suppose. He's a genuine hero, the real deal. Just like my ancestors, Jack Random and Ruby Journey. It feels right being at the Deathstalker's side. If only he didn't keep dragging me into danger all the time.
But that's what heroes do.
I know. I admire Lewis, I really do, but I can't decide right now. I need to know more. Follow my lead, Rose.
Don't I always?
They went over to join Leslie Springfield, who raised a polite eyebrow. Brett nodded jerkily.
Lead the way. I'm not promising anything, mind, but I'll listen.
Once you know the truth of who and what we are, you know we can't just let you walk away.
I know how the game is played. Lead on. I want to know everything.
And he only had to push Leslie Springfield with just the lightest touch of his maze-backed compulsion. They ended up in a deserted weapons bay, where a large crowd of loyalists had gathered together to meet Brett. He tried to do a surreptitious head count, but there were too many of them, and every single one of them studied Brett coldly as he entered. He gave them his most professional, trustworthy smile, and allowed Leslie to lead him and Rose to the guest seats of honor. Someone presented Brett with a glass of wine, which was surprisingly good, and someone else offered him a cigar.
Well, thanks.
Which Brett took, because he always took anything that was offered for free. He sat down, and Rose took up a position standing beside him, her hands resting on her weapons belt. Everyone was very polite to her. Various people took it in turns to present Brett with loyalist propaganda and harsher pure humanity and church militant beliefs, and he smiled and nodded in all the right places. The general pattern of the planned uprising was explained to him, but not the details. That would only come later, once he'd committed himself to the cause. Brett drank his wine and smoked his cigar, and listened carefully to everything that was said to him. His stomach ached, but he kept it out of his face. Finally, they ran out of things to say to him, and Brett looked out on a crowd of intent faces. Rose was a comforting presence at his side, but Brett really didn't like the odds.
So, are you in or out?
I'm in.
We're delighted to have you and Rose aboard, of course, but you do understand that we need you to prove your commitment to the cause.
I thought that might be coming. What exactly did you have in mind?
The crowd parted as several Marines brought forward a man, bound and gagged. They forced the man onto his knees, and his eyes looked pleadingly at Brett.
This fool thought he could be a spy among us and report back to the false silence. Kill him.
And Brett knew that even hesitation would damn him.
Of course. Rose, do the honors if you would.
Rose smiled happily, and everyone near her shied away. She stepped forward, grabbed the prisoner's head with both hands, and ripped it away with one savage movement. The crowd fell back. Rose kissed the severed head on the lips and then casually threw it away. She bent over the headless body, plunged her hand into its back, pulled out the still pulsing heart, and started to eat it. Several people vomited, and a hell of a lot more looked like they wanted to.
Nicely done, but do remember to brush your teeth with a special vigor tonight. Anything else we can do for you, Leslie?
No, not for the moment. We've set up a secure channel so that you can talk to us freely at any time, without it showing up on the comm officer's instruments. We can also arrange ship-to-ship communications as necessary. But now, we have someone special who wants to welcome you to the cause.
A view screen flared into life on the wall beside them, and Brett's heart jumped painfully in his chest.
Ah, my dear Brett. So good to see you safe and sound after so many adventures. Come home, dear boy, and all shall be forgiven. We'll be together again, just like the old times. Won't that be fun? You know we belong together. We are the same kind. We see the world in the same way. Why did you leave me, Brett?
Because I thought I saw better opportunities.
Ah, I should have known. Return to me, and you shall never have to want for money again. I shall deny you nothing. And do bear in mind how easy it was for me to find you and arrange this little chat. My people are everywhere, loyal unto death and beyond. Oh, say that you'll be mine again, dear Brett.
Why not? After all I've been through with Lewis, after all I've done for him, I'm still not one penny richer than when I started.
Am I welcome too?
Why, of course, dear Rose. I have missed your blessed madness most of all.
Will I get to kill lots of people?
Lots and lots.
It's good to be back.
Deathstalker Coda, Here Be Monsters is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2005, Simon R. Green. Production copyright 2008, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Richard Rowan, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Vanessa Benjamin, Corey James, Peter Stray, Barbara Pinolini, Elizabeth Demery, Sonny Lasky, Ken Jackson, Nanette Savard, Bruce Allen Rauscher, James Konacek, Thomas Penny, Michael John Casey, Lily Beacon, James Lewis, Doug Krenzlin, and Mort Schobe. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Rick Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Chris Rowan. The Deathstalker Coda theme was composed by Dan Smith. Additional original music by Chris Rowan and Dan Smith. If you enjoyed Deathstalker Coda, be sure to look for the Serrano Legacy, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.